and welcome to It's an Arsenal Thing. I'm your host, Tom, and I'm once again supported by my silent friend and favourite fridge raider, Dave Hutchinson. Well, we're back, and it's like we've either been sedated or put on anti-anxiety tablets for the three performances we're about to cover. In an exaggerated whirlwind of fake excitement, we make no apologies and show no signs of embarrassment or remorse for the unnecessary baloney, magnification or fabrication of footballing events. On the menu tonight, the Bodo Glint's second leg of the Europa League in the far-flung icy corner of Norway, where a pint costs £13, not even a full pint. Connor covers every blade of frozen grass in the three-part Gonna Get Into It, which also features the Premier League clash against Leeds and the WSL clash against Reading. Lauren brings us up to speed in the WSL with that clash against Reading and all the general news that you can't afford to miss. I'm back in the gum room with the Pocketeers, Jay and Lauren, to pick out all the talking points, such as they were. Incidents, were there? And key moments, well, as much as we could find. The seams are absolutely splitting on this podcast.
It's an Arsenal thing, it's an Arsenal thing. Believe it or not, it's an Arsenal thing. With football and transfers, you know who you'll bring. You're listening to It's an Arsenal Thing.
I've got a bone to pick with Stuart Pearce. Yes, I have. He's recently gone on record to say that the only reason the Gunners are top of the Premier League is because Manchester City sold them Gabriel Jesus. Remember, this is the Stuart Pearce that once said, "I would have taken Stan Collymore ahead of Dennis Bergkamp even for £1 million more. Liverpool have got the better deal than Arsenal." He also said that Dennis Bergkamp is a waste of money. I doubt he can help Arsenal win anything.
Odegaard!
So, Norway, Leeds, Reading. Oh, let's deal with that lot. What a mixed bag. Norway, famous for fish, sweaters and ugly troll figures, a couple of which look like Tottenham players. Did you know that Norway introduced salmon sushi to Japan after it was suggested by a Norwegian delegation in the 1980s? They also do a brown caramel cheese. We'll try to avoid that. But they have had award-winning world champion cheeses, as in Ostergaarden, a winner of the world champion cheese in 2018, and Tingvoll in 2016. They also created the cheese slicer back in 1925. These are all brilliant facts, obviously. By contrast, Leeds is known for the playwright Alan Bennett. Alan Bennett, a man who can make an entire play about buying a new pair of shoes. It's also famous for Yorkshire Curd, IPA and the Otley Run, a pub crawl in Leeds in West Yorkshire. I've got a picture here. There's a butcher, a pig and a psychedelic gaggle of lasses dressed in 1960s clobber. Paracetamols, bottle of Evian water and a darkened room, please. So what's Reading famous for? Apparently beer and biscuits. Is that it? Unbelievable. Didn't take you long to research that, Dave, did it?
Hello, my name's Alan Bennett. I'd just like to thank everyone at It's an Arsenal Thing for promoting my latest play. It's of an autobiographical nature regarding the purchase of some shoes one warm and wonderful spring day in Yorkshire. Shoes on are absolutely marvellous and do shoes that are almost like leather.
Right, it's time to go over to Connor for his match report on the clash between Arsenal and Bodo Glimt.
So here is the match report from last Thursday's less than comprehensive 1-0 win away to Bodo Glimt on an artificial surface in a freezing cold Norway, as Bukayo Saka's fortunate goal gave us all 3 points with a 1-0 win last Thursday. The England winger saw his shot blocked, but the rebound bounced off his forehead and into the back of the net. Arsenal know victory over PSV this week will seal a top 2 spot in our group stage of this year's Europa League. Well, playing on an artificial surface in the cold environment of a fishing city just north of the Arctic Circle, Mikel Arteta's side largely struggled to fashion any clear-cut chances. Saka literally kissed the Gunners in front without knowing too much about it in their only effort on target in the entire match. Speaking to BT Sport after the game, Saka admitted that he thought it came off his lips. An incredible, incredible thing to say, really. Well, how did we edge past Bodø/Glimt then? Well, another rotated Arsenal side came out to a raucous home crowd in an 8-degree chill, a temperature twice as cold as London. And Arsenal really struggled on the artificial surface against a side with 14 consecutive European victories at home. The only real effort on goal before Arsenal's opener came through Albert Sambi Lokonga, who fired wide of goal from the edge of the area. Lokonga was given a rare start. Matt Turner started in goal. Ben White and William Saliba kept their places in the starting 11 as Rob Holding came in to partner Saliba at centre-back. Kieran Tierney started once again at left-back, while Vieira, Odegaard and Lokonga made up our three-man midfield, with Bukayo Saka, Eddie Nketiah and Reece Nelson our front three. Gabriel Martinelli dropped to the bench. Rare start for Reece Nelson, who failed to impress. Well, Arsenal's opener did come as Lokonga fed Saka in the right channel of the box. And while his first effort was blocked by a defender, the rebound bounced kindly off his face and deceived the Bodø goalkeeper by dropping into the net. Saka really should have doubled the advantage when Martin Odegaard, playing in his native Norway for the first time since he was 15 years old, fed the England winger in the box, but Saka rushed his shot, which flew past the near post. Bodø provided a reminder of their threat before the break, as Sol Bakken flicked on a long ball and played Pellegrino clean through on goal. The top scorer in Norway's top flight left home fans aghast as he got his bearings all wrong to put the simple chance high and wide without testing Matt Turner. Bodø kept the pressure on Arsenal throughout the second half, with the Gunners failing to register a significant chance on goal after half-time. Pellegrino was played through once again down the left after Lokonga's poor pass in midfield, and while the Bodø forward got a shot on target, this time Arsenal goalkeeper Matt Turner parried his effort easily. Well, 3 points, a spot in the Europa League knockout stages, drawing closer. No injuries and 11 wins from 12 this season. Mikel Arteta does have reason to be content after this latest win, despite a poor second half showing and a less than convincing performance overall. With plenty of changes in his starting 11, it was job well done. It finished last Thursday in Norway. Bodø/Glimt 0, Arsenal 1.
Yes, it's true. No one has shined as bright as you. As bright as you. Hey, Dennis Bergkamp, you will always be my hero. How you graced the pitch at Highbury. You are better than Ronaldo. Close my eyes. Dreaming of you playing in our side. Back on his ass.
Super Dennis Bergkamp, what a star. Bergkamp was the best, that's true. And one thing we can promise you, Premiership will never be the same. Never be the same. Hey Dennis Bergkamp, you're a god, we'd like to thank you. 2 sad years have passed since you were here, and how the Arsenal miss you. Yes we do.
It part two with Lauren, bringing us up to speed with all the latest on the WSL and that clash against Reading.
Hello, I am back after a short week off. It was, of course, an international break, so you might be thinking that there's not much to talk about. You would be incorrect. I'm Lauren and I'm here with all things Arsenal women. And let me tell you, we have an awful lot to catch up on. Who have the Gunners managed to secure World Cup qualifying for their nation? What injuries have cast doubts over our WSL success this season? How do we get on versus Reading, a team battling down near relegation? And what can we expect from Wednesday night's game versus Lyon? Let's get started, shall we? So let's go back a few days, and I don't really want to be biased, but I don't know where else to start. I want to congratulate McCabe, of course, who captained Ireland to a 1-0 victory over Scotland, booking their place in the World Cup this summer. It will be Ireland's first major tournament. Very, very exciting. Also on their way down under are Valti's Switzerland, who managed to beat Wales in a very thrilling 2-1 victory, with the winning goal coming in the 121st minute. Right before the final whistle. Portugal also qualified. They knocked out Iceland with a 4-1 win, which also came in added time despite Iceland having a player sent off in the 52nd minute. Drama all around. And while all the other games that took place were friendlies, they certainly didn't disappoint either. The game that dominated, of course, was England versus the US, the European champions versus the world champions. So from an Arsenal perspective, it was a game that unfortunately delivered some bad news. Lee Williamson, Lioness captain, and of course the powerhouse of the Arsenal defence, was ruled unfit for the game. Although initially people suspected it was more of a precautionary measure rather than a reactive one, when pictures emerged of her with an ankle boot on her foot, I think that's the right term, those kind of weird chunky boots that you wear if you have a foot injury, ankle boot? Yeah. It was obvious that it was slightly more serious. Not slightly more serious. It was more serious than we had initially thought. So everyone was left wondering, what would that mean for her, the Lionesses, and more importantly, the Gunners? Well, England seemed to fare absolutely fine. They managed to secure a 2-1 victory over their opponents in Wembley. However, the game was not without controversy. Our dear friend VAR was involved in ruling out an equaliser from the US for an offside that was neither clear nor obvious. If it was there at all. Mead played, she had a very decent game. She was very fluid up front. It was her, Hemp and Kelly, both City players who we know from the Euros. And it'll probably take some time for them to adjust to Ellen White-less English team, if you will. But they played well, 2-1. I think the result was very generous to the Lionesses, but a win's a win. You take it when you can. So alongside all that, Miedema also withdrew from the Dutch team due to an illness, and as we know, Rafaela was out and unable to play for Brazil with a foot fracture. So with all this fitness uncertainty building up, worry did begin to creep in. for Arsenal. Our preferred centre-back pairing was out. There was no indication of a recovery time. So what were our options going into a very busy October month? Well, we did see a very impressive display from Wuba Moy, who came on against Ajax. But who would be dropping in beside her? That was the big question. There was some discussion about Beattie or even perhaps Valti dropping back and having Nobbs playing in midfield. So far this season, Jordan Nobbs has featured sporadically and infrequently in Idaval's plans, with many fans fearing that's not going to change any time soon. A lot of people are speculating that a loan move in January is on the cards, but I'm not too sure about that. We'll have to see. Anyway, the WSL got back underway this weekend, just gone, kicking off literally, on Saturday with an absolute belter. The only game of the day was Villa, who took on West Ham at home, and it was the visitors who claimed the shock win in a game that can really only be described as utter chaos. Villa, the team with the WSL Manager of the Month, Carla Ward, and Player of the Month, Rachel Daly, for September, conceded two goals in the first half, only to miss a penalty before getting one goal back, but it wasn't enough in the end to even earn them a point. The highlight of the match was probably a red card for Sissoko, who gave Mayland a smack across the face after the latter started on her. Okay, so Sissoko is a West Ham player. On her way down the tunnel, there was more commotion in the technical area and two more staff members were also booked. Oh God, the WSL, we did miss you. Arsenal were the last game to kick off on Sunday evening, and here are the results from earlier on in the day. So United continued their winning ways. They scored four against Brighton, conceded none. That sent them to the top of the table. Chelsea managed a 3-1-0 away from home against Everton, and obviously this is probably the best time to say that if you aren't already aware, their manager, Emma Hayes, will be out for a significant amount of time due to having undergone emergency hysterectomy. So obviously you only wish her the best and a speedy recovery. City back to their winning ways, 4-0 against Leicester, and Spurs scored one against Liverpool, but that was enough to get them the 3 points. So we were taking on Reading, last game of the day, a team hovering just around the dotted line at the bottom of the table. Of course, it's very early on in the season yet, but given that United have bet them 4-0, we should be doing the same, really. Arsenal needed to win to go back on top. They need to score two goals to go back on top to be level with United on goal difference. So how did they get on? So we'll have a quick look at the lineup first to see how Idaval was planning on dealing with the defensive issues at the back. Zinsberger was, of course, in goal, and she was on course to make WSL history by keeping 8 consecutive clean sheets for the first time. Could she do it, given the shake-up in front of her? McCabe was in at left-back for Kately, who filled in the left side of the centre-back role with Wuba Moy alongside her. Wien Reuter kept her place at right-back. Valti was in the central midfield position, medium to her left and Kim Little to her right. Blackstinius played the number 9 role. Ford started on the left, as she has done so far this season very impressively, and Mead found herself on the right wing. So getting into the game itself, well, there wasn't really that much to talk about. There was a few good chances early on. Kately's ball to Blackstinius in the opening 30 seconds created a nice one-on-one with the Reading keeper, WSL first-timer Jackie Burns, whose name you're going to hear a lot as we go through this. But the Swede failed to make much of the chance, unfortunately. The best opportunity came from Wien Reuter, of all people. Ford's pass across the face of goal was met by the right back, who caught it on the volley, but unfortunately didn't manage to get it on target. Wasn't long after that, though, in the 30th minute, Arsenal did manage to get a shot on target, and even more importantly, into the back of the net. Little's expert turn allowed her to find Blackstinius on the edge of the D, and from there, the goal was scored. It was a decent strike, but I think given Burns' performance on the day, she would have been disappointed to concede in that manner. Second half got underway and Arsenal should have scored more, to be honest. McCabe hit the bar, it went out for a corner, only for Blackstinius to hit the same post as her teammate moments before. Zinsberger, until the second half, really didn't have much to do, but when she was called into action, she did make a crucial save to keep her team 1-0 up and her record of clean sheets on target. Arsenal were awarded a penalty in the 68th minute after the ball hit one of the Reading players' arms from a Mead cross into the box. Little stepped up to take it, someone you would bet your house on to score, but she was denied by the keeper on her WSL debut. You could see from her face how much it meant to her. From there, Reading seemed to creep back into it. Their sense of belief was sparked, but they were denied by the woodwork and an exceptional save from Zinsberg with her left foot. Substitute Frieda Manum also managed a goal line clearance from a corner before the end of the game. So much like our game against Leeds, the women did it the hard way. They grinded out a 1-0 victory, but it was enough to maintain their winning run. Unfortunately, not enough to send them back to the top of the table. They've scored one goal less than United, who sit atop. It's only goal difference, though. Player of the match was, of course, Zinsberger, not only for her dazzling performance on the night, but her consistent brilliance. 8 clean sheets in a row, a new WSL record. In her post-match interview, she was very humble. She said she's taking it game by game, but it's definitely not something to be overlooked. So massive congratulations to her. So looking ahead now, Arsenal get their Champions League group stage underway on Wednesday with a tough match against Lyon. And I think we can all probably rule this one out, to be completely honest. Lyon, last season's winners, all-time Champions League record holders. They're a phenomenal team. Arsenal squad, even without injuries, probably couldn't compete with them. Best case scenario, we come away with the draw. But fear not, we do have a slightly handier game, let's say, in the WSL on Sunday against Liverpool. So we should be coming away with a win from that newly promoted Liverpool. How exciting. So that's all for me this week. Thank you so much for listening. I'll be back again next week to let you know how we got on against Lyon and Liverpool. Hopefully wins all around, but we'll have to wait and see. See you next week.
Where has the been since I saw me?
Oh, me.
On ill day more battered. Where has the been since I saw thee?
Where has I been since I saw thee?
Where has the been since I saw thee?
You saw me.
On ill day more battered. On ill day more battered.
So what's this song about then? Apparently it's the story of a lover courting the object of his affections and desires called Mary Jane on Ilkley Moor without his hat. Who makes a song about that, honestly? Oh, God almighty, Dave, you kill me with this stuff.
It's an Arsenal thing, it's an Arsenal thing. Believe it or not, it's an Arsenal thing. With football and transfers, you know who you'll bring. You're listening to It's an Arsenal Thing.
Right, it's time to go over to Connor in Gonna Get Into It.
Wow, what about that? 9 wins from 10, the first time Arsenal have won 9 from their opening 10 league games in the history of the club. Mikel Arteta, well done. Sensational start to the season. Yes, it wasn't comprehensive. It was another 1-0 win where we really shouldn't have won after beating Bodo Glimt 3 days before in Norway. We didn't play at our best, but as Arteta said after the game, to travel to Norway, making the amount of changes we made. Wait, I think I'm making some excuses. We weren't at our best, that's it, but we found a way to win. And well, of course, the Manchester United side under Sir Alex Ferguson, they found a way to win time and time again. We rode our luck, and we rode quite a lot of luck on Sunday in our 1-0 win away to Leeds. In a game delayed 40 minutes due to a power cut, Bukayo Saka provided the spark by hitting his 4th goal in a week to beat Leeds United, but that only told half the story of a dramatic encounter at Elland Road. The attacker rifled in the early goal of the game on 35 minutes to ensure Arsenal won 9 of our first 10 top-flight games for the first time ever. But really, this was far from a routine victory, as Leeds pushed us all the way until the very last kick of the game. We received a let-off in the second half when Patrick Bamford pulled a penalty wide of the mark, and also we survived a VAR penalty check deep into stoppage time to somehow remain top of the Premier League table. Mo Salah's wonder goal at Anfield later on Sunday meant that we are now 4 points clear of Manchester City thanks to Liverpool's 1-0 win against Guardiola's men. We are the only side in the Premier League still to be beaten as City lost for the first time. Well, it certainly was a unique start to proceedings on Sunday when after just 68 seconds, a power cut within the stadium caused referee Chris Kavanagh to stop play. After 10 minutes of an extended warm-up, he then sent both teams back down the tunnel and 40 minutes would elapse before the game resumed again. Leeds adapt to this disruption better, really, and they really did come out stronger, typified by Luis Sinisterra driving forward and shooting just wide not long after the restart, before the Colombian saw another drive from range clip Ben White and hit the side netting. From the resulting corner then, Amelie in the box saw Ramsdale save smartly from Pascal Struck before we sprung a counter-attack that saw Gabriel Jesus dink the ball over Ilan Meslier from close range, but also the crossbar. But that side of goal saw Arsenal grow in confidence ever so slightly, and 10 minutes before the break, we got in front. A terrible wayward crossfield pass by Rodrigo, what on earth was he thinking? Well, that was headed towards Saka, who nodded it brilliantly into the path of Martin Odegaard, who was in space. The Norwegian then threaded a beautiful through ball into the attacker's path, and Saka, from a tight angle on his weaker right foot, lashed the ball into the roof of the net from a tight angle, and he scored for the third straight game. That saw us head into the break in front, 1-0 at half-time, but Patrick Bamford's introduction from the bench lifted the home crowd, and his team, who would enjoy the better of the second half's chances, would really go close. Less than a minute after the second half kicked off, Bamford thought he'd made an instant impact when he hooked the ball into the goal, but the goal was rightly chalked off for a foul on Gabriel in the build-up. Ramsdale was then forced to make a good stop to deny Leeds' talisman when he pounced on a loose ball, but our goalkeeper made himself big to snuff out the chance. On the hour mark, though, he was offered a golden chance to get his team level. Jack Harrison clipped a lovely pass over our defence, and William Saliba handled the ball in the area. And after a VAR check, a penalty was rightly rewarded. But Patrick Bamford dragged his effort wide of the post. Huge let-off, still 1-0 to the Arsenal, but Leeds were coming at us time and time again. Jesse March's team kept carving out the chances, and Sinisterra saw a shot blocked by Gabriel before Brendan Aaronson was next to test Ramsdale with a shot from range. A few minutes later, Crescencio Somerville blasted over a cutback when well placed inside the area. But there was further drama before the end. A coming together between Patrick Bamford and Gabriel saw referee Kavanagh award a second penalty to the home side and a red card for our Brazilian defender. But after being summoned to the monitor by the VAR check and VAR officials, he overturned his decision to ensure he returned to North London with all 3 points. But what, oh what, was Gabriel thinking? I was absolutely furious with our Brazilian. Bamford clearly committed the foul, bundled Gabriel to the floor. It wasn't a shoulder to shoulder, it was a nudge on Gabriel's back. Gabriel was going nowhere, needless by Bamford, but Gabriel lashed out and kicked out at Bamford, and really, our Brazilian was lucky to get away with that one. If Bamford wasn't so naive, and if the Leeds substitute hadn't pushed our defender to the ground, it surely would have been a penalty. And well, listen to this. Bukayo Saka has now been involved in 9 goals in his last 10 appearances for Arsenal in all competitions. 5 goals, 4 assists. And while this is now the second time he has scored in 3 consecutive games for us, it also happened in December and January of last season. Saka's goal was his 50th goal involvement for Arsenal under Arteta in all competitions. He has scored 26 goals and provided 24 assists. Incredible. He is the first player to reach that figure for the club since the Spaniard took charge back in 2019. And well, this was the first Premier League game this season in which Arsenal failed to score after half-time. Well, of course, we host PSV in the Europa League this Thursday as the top two in our group face off before returning to league action with a trip to Southampton on Sunday. It finished at Elland Road on Sunday though. Leeds United 0, Arsenal 1.
One, two. Is it working? Right, here we go. Aaron Ramsdale, he's the man between the sticks. Aaron Ramsdale, he made all those fans look dicks who said he wasn't worth a penny. He wasn't worth a bean. He could be the greatest keeper that the Arsenal's ever seen. Aaron Ramsdale.
It's time to enter the gunroom for a natter.
Hi, welcome to the gun room. It's not about performance, is it? It's not all about that. It's about points as well. With me, we have got Jay. How are you, Jay?
All good, thank you.
Fully recovered.
Absolutely.
He's been shouting himself hoarse somewhere. Mm. And at the bottom there, there's Lauren. How are you, Lauren?
I'm good, thank you.
Well, as I say, normally we're glowing about the performances, but that's not going to be the case today. We're going to be gritty and we're going to accept what we've been given because what we've got is not bad, is it, really? Before we start, let's have a happy Invincibles Day. Let's cast our mind back. Lauren, you're far too young, aren't you?
It's fine. I've read the history.
when were you actually born?
96.
I feel terribly old now, even older than usual. Jay, well, I mean, it was a cracking time to be an Arsenal supporter. Yeah. What do you recall of that sort of period?
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't just the Invincible season. It was the 4 or 5 years, you know, sort of maybe two years prior and a few years after, where the squad was being assembled by Wenger. And, you know, in each department, we had great players. For example, the forward line, you had like four or five world-class strikers, players like Carnu and Wiltord that would have walked into most sides back in those days, were sort of support acts to Bergkamp and Henri and Jose Reyes and...
I love Reyes.
Yeah. What I mean, such a shame what happened to him. And he was such a great player. And he was almost your typical Spanish, can he do it on a rainy night in Stoke? You know, he couldn't. He could only do it when the sun was out. But he was so good, wasn't he? His ability, his dribbling, and he very rarely lost the ball. Great player. And I mean, just the whole era back in those days, even starting with, you know, Jens in goal, so unpredictable, but also so reliable in net. And every player in that squad played a part in those days. I suppose the only downside was they never won the Champions League, and they should have won the Champions League because we were head and shoulders above any of the sides back in those days. It just wasn't meant to be. It was also a shame. It was only the Ballon d'Or last night, and it was a shame that Henri never got it. I think there was the season when Pavel Nedved picked it up when he was playing for Juve, and Henri's stats and his form was so much better than Nedved, and it was a shame he never got that. But great times, and it's always, you know, with City losing on Sunday, you know, it's always definitely something that needs to be celebrated because it's not... I think to a certain group or a certain football fan, Going through the season unbeaten or being invincible because it's Arsenal isn't that difficult. Like, it's just, you know, oh, well, you know, I'd rather be Champions League winner, or, you know, but nobody's done it since, and nobody's come even close to it. I suppose Liverpool a couple of years ago, but it's a huge achievement and it needs to be celebrated. And when City lose, even a club with all their economic might and the great players they've got and the great addition in Haaland, and they are a fantastic team and they've got a great manager, and but sometimes, you know, you need that little bit more, and have City, you know, you think back to those days, the unbelievable team spirit that the club had. Wenger instilled this belief that you didn't have to adapt to your opposition because we would have won the game by half time. How many times in those days, Tom, were we 3-0 up at half time?
Yeah.
Or 20 minutes in and we're 2-0 up. And you know, you see some interviews with players back in those days, opposition, and they're in the tunnel at Highbury, and it was just like, you know, you would regularly hear opposition players say the game was lost even before we went out, because you turn into your right and you've got Vieira and you've got Henri. And in Gilberto, and then obviously later on Edu, and what a time! It was so lucky to have been through that. You know, Man United were good.
It was a privilege to pay your money and go and be thoroughly entertained. It really was.
But in those days, you know, Man United were really good. They had an unbelievable manager in Ferguson, and they had some great sides. But, I mean, you only have to watch the Arsene Wenger documentary. Ferguson's on there saying just how good Wenger was and how going through the season unbeaten eclipsed anything he did as a manager. So, unbelievable times. We could do, again, I know we say this a lot on here, but we could do a podcast just on that season, because it was just, you know, we could do multiple podcasts on that season. Great times, great players, and it always needs to be celebrated, Invincible Day.
I feel like I was talking to Lauren and said, look, what we're going to do is do the bit on the Invincibles. And obviously she said, I've missed out. Oh, here we go again. It's not you this time, Jay, it's me. It's not you, it's me. It's some antivirus thing I can't get rid of, and it just keeps popping up. So apologies, podcast family.
Better
well,
not to ask.
Would you like to know? I was saying to Lauren, she's kind of missed out on that period, but it feels like we're just turning a corner and getting certain aspects of the Wenger era back, because you've got this unbelievable team spirit. But that was, I mean, just looking at it on paper, it's mouthwatering, isn't it? Campbell, Touré, Lauren, Cole, Vieira, Gilberto. Not this Lauren, obviously. The other
that was
one.
My first jersey I ever got, though, with Lauren.
Was
on
it?
The
I bet
it
you
was
did.
Indeed, yeah. Absolutely. Fantastic. How could I not?
Pires, Bergkamp and Henri. I mean, that's a dream team, isn't it? And as you say, I think, Jay, is the problem with me is the performances were so good and they deserve so much more.
Yeah.
Yes, they went unbeaten. But you look at the Man United sides that went on to keep winning titles and stuff like that, and I don't begrudge them. Obviously, they churned it out. But in skill levels, and I'm going to say this because I'm an Arsenal fan, but in skill levels, you had Man United gritty, determined, play for 102 minutes. And they were a very physical side. And then you had the polish, the slickness, the class, the quality of Arsenal. And that must have really proper pissed old Blue Nose off. That really must have got up his nose.
I mean, even just one more thing I just wanted to say. You did have all of that and you're dead right, Tom. But that team also had strength and it also had ability to deal with the physical side. You know, you could start from the front, you know, Dennis, you know, Bergkamp, he was as, you know, as hard as any player on from any era. He was like, he would give elbows and he would be, you know, he would certainly wouldn't shirk away from any physical defender. You had Pat Vieira, Gilberto, and obviously Campbell, who was ultra aggressive, you know, one of my favorite defenders of all time. So good in the tackle, so strong.
Rick Shithouse comes to mind.
Massively. And then what this often gets spoke, you know, this often comes out on social media, who is the hardest player in Premier League history? And you have players like Keane and Vieira, but you search for photos of Lauren and the eyes of Lauren, and he was an absolute nutcase. And there are stories of opposition players being absolutely shit scared of him.
Not this Lauren. Lauren.
I can be scary when I eat as well. Don't worry.
And he just, there's a great photo of the Old Trafford brawl, and Lauren has grabbed Van Nistelrooy, and it's the eyes of Lauren. And that team had everything. Great skill, great technical ability, but also they were absolutely nails as well. So, I mean, whenever they're on TV, you know, you stumble across something on Sky or whatever, and you always sit and watch it, don't you? You can watch it all day. Just unbelievable time for the club and a team that neutrals still talk about now. My friends support multiple, you know, all different football clubs, but very rarely do any of them come out and say anything was better than the Invincibles. So, great stuff, unbelievable.
I think the only team that I really enjoyed their football was Keegan's Newcastle, other than obviously Arsenal. I mean, that was a cracking team as well. But we digress, obviously. We've got plenty to cover here. We've got three very ploddy matches to go through and try and make them sound exciting. Are you ready for the challenge? Right. Bodo Glimt the second part. Let's have a quick look at the team. No real surprises. Turner in goal, Kieran Tierney, Rob Holding, William Saliba, Ben White, Sambi Lokonga, Fabio Vieira, Reece Nelson, Odegaard, Saka and Nketiah. As I said, not too many highlights there, were there, Lauren? And it was, I've got to be honest though, what a place to travel to, back and beyond, frosty as hell. It wasn't pretty to watch, but we got the 3 points. We'll be saying that a lot, people, our podcast family, we'll be saying 3 points, to reinforce it. What was your opinion, Lauren?
Absolutely. Yeah, it wasn't a great match. Lost a bit of interest in it. It didn't really have anything enticing to be watching. I thought the atmosphere was great. Their fans were exceptional. It was a great place to travel to. Obviously, we didn't travel, but living vicariously through the screen, it looked incredible. Yeah, you know, I think, yeah, we did deserve the win. I think we got lucky for the goal, but I think overall we were the better team.
They had some chances though, Lauren, didn't they?
And actually, one thing I would like to say is I take back a lot of the criticism I dished out to Turner. I thought he played very, very well.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously it's going to take a bit of time to settle in and stuff, and he's not really getting a look in the Premier League at the moment. So it really is his opportunity to shine here, and I thought
best game in an Arsenal shirt for sure.
Easy, and I thought he was probably our best player on the pitch. So I mean, look, you know, if to take the good and the bad and the 3 points if we can. So yeah,
ka-ching. Yeah, you've got to have it. When you go away for some of these grubby games, these grubby away games like Leeds, but we'll come on to that in a bit, and Reading. But yeah, you've got to just grit your teeth and sometimes just wear it. Jake, goal after 24 minutes. Did you watch the match? Did you start reading the bottom of your teacup? It's like one of those. It's one of those things when someone offers you a bit of cake and it's absolutely pants, but you've got to say how good it is, isn't it? That's what I feel this game's like.
I mean, it was a tough watch, wasn't it? It was rough. It was rough stuff. I think the first half we passed the ball pretty well and we created a couple of chances, but so did they. I think Rob Holding, there was a chance in the first half where Rob Holding just nicked it off of their striker's foot at the back post. And then obviously they created a few chances in the second half, but I just want to echo what Lauren said. I thought Turner was superb. I thought like Lauren said, he's not going to get much game time because he's got an exceptional goalkeeper in front of him. However, he's obviously using this time to improve. He's an elite football club with elite coaches and elite teammates. And I mean, I think we've already seen definitely he's improved. I thought he swept up really well. And he held together. We didn't play very well. I think it was quite disjointed. I don't know whether it was to do with the pitch, you know, with it not being a grass pitch.
It must have had some effect, mustn't it?
I think, you know, you could see, couldn't you, certain times when the ball was in slow motion, it doesn't quite bounce maybe in the way that they expect it to, or the ball doesn't roll or whatever in the same way as it would. Over the moon to get away with the 3 points because it was a... You know, you didn't feel like we were going to, if they would have scored, you couldn't see a score in a second. And Saka's goal, he had a couple of chances like that. He looked lively in the first half, causing them some problems, and he got a bit lucky, but you've got to make the chances, haven't you? You know, you've got to make the chances and make your own luck in those situations, got the goal. And yeah, I wouldn't say we nicked the 3 points because like Lauren said, we were the better side, but from what we've seen this season, it wasn't the best performance, probably one of the worst performances from our point of view. So delighted with a win. Absolutely.
Well, I think the thing is, we've been absolutely spoiled. I mean, we've been talking about the Invincibles, but this season, our football has been, I've had a little bit of a to-do with Rich on Facebook today, because he said that when I put about the Invincibles, he said, now that was an era, which I totally agree with. And I said, but, you know, we've kicked off our campaign and it's been quite strong. And there have been plenty of goals, plenty of good performances. but he's not convinced. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it depends what you're looking for, I suppose, in life, doesn't it? But you can't sort of take away from one thing because something else was sort of more rose-tinted in your mind. Mm-hmm. Let's do some stats. It was that poor. Six shots for them, seven for us. One shot on target each, 45% possession and 55% for us. So,
it seems closer watching it. I don't know. it wasn't that bad now that I think back on it.
Well, I just couldn't, you know, I was looking at the biscuit and dunking that and looking at something else, looking at the phone.
Yeah. But I think it probably is worth mentioning as well, was that their first loss to away side in Europe in six games, or I can't remember the stats now, but it was their first loss at home in a long time. So I think, you know,
I can fill that in for you, Lauren. The power of 14. Bodo Glimt have won 14 consecutive home matches in European competitions. Arsenal have lost just one in their last 14 away games in UEFA Europa League, with that defeat coming surprisingly against Unai Emery's Villarreal in 2021. Lauren, bring us up to speed with the WSL. What about Reading versus Arsenal? Let's walk through that. Sorry, Podders. It's going to be another one of those, like, grit your teeth and bear with us.
I was just going to say, like, don't be looking to me now for any bright.
Were you happy with the side?
Yeah, that's probably a good place to start. So, obviously, we're coming back from international break, which we spoke about last week. Had a few unfortunate injury updates with Williamson, for example, out. And Miedema, who had missed international duty, was back. So, basically, to summarise there, we're missing our centre-back pairing of Rafael and Williamson. There's no real time frame given as to when they're going to be back. So, you know, a lot of question marks there, especially given how important they are in the team. I mean, I would say they really are the powerhouse at getting Williamson more so than anyone. She can pick a pass and she can just create a chance in a heartbeat. So given the injuries that we're dealing with, I was pretty happy with the team, to be honest. I thought, you know, it's probably the best that we could have done. There was a lot of talk about maybe Jordan Nobbs coming in. I think people are feeling she's been a bit hard done by this season. She's not really getting a look in. So I think that was probably the only thing that could be mentioned there. So instead of her coming in, basically it was just a slight shift shifted in, if that makes sense. So McCabe
makes
came back.
Makes perfect sense for this podcast.
Does it?
Oh, okay, yeah, perfect. Absolutely.
You know what I'm like at this stage. So McCabe came back to the left back and Kately slotted in at left centre back. So it was more of a shift rather than someone else coming in. Yeah, I think it was okay, you know.
Sure, well, we nearly got a goal really early on, didn't we, through Blackstinius, 40 seconds, but great diving save by Jacqueline Burns. Mm-hmm. But that goal, that was a bit fortunate as well. I think that the goalkeeper was a bit unsighted with that, but Stina Blackstinius got the goal for us, and that was pretty much it, wasn't it? Good night. Mm-hmm. Thanks very much.
Yeah, if only it was that simple, really. But yeah, no, I think it was a decent strike. I think given the game that the keeper had, she would have been very, very disappointed. Worth mentioning as well, it was her WSL debut. I thought she played an absolute blinder. I thought
really
she was
phenomenal.
So I think she'd be disappointed in the goal. Obviously, Arsenal fan, not complaining. And probably worth mentioning as well, Kim Little had a lovely turn to set Blackstinius off. So, you know, you really do need to create those chances that Jay was saying, like, luck will only bring you so far, but you need to be creating the opportunities for luck to arise. So, yeah, you know, I think the games are quite comparable in a weird, you know, it's almost faith really this week. Everything just seems to be aligning. But yeah, no, we got.
It's a modest universe this week. Isn't it? It's very modest.
Keeping us
humble.
Were
you surprised by Reading? Because I didn't expect them to be that good.
I was pretty shocked. I thought, I mean, look, we're talking about a team who are yet to win a game. They've lost 4-0 to United in the opening weekend, and they've also lost 2-1 to Brighton, who we comfortably bet 4-0. So to come away with one, we won 1-0, to come away with, you know, only managing to get one goal by them, I thought it was, I don't know if it was unflattering for us or if they were actually that good. I think given the injuries and the switch up in the team that, you know, it's going to take us a bit of while to gel and get used to how we're playing in this formation, I suppose, or with these players. But I was surprised by them. Again, I think they had moments of really, really good chances, more so than us in the second half. And again, credit where credit's due, their keeper was exceptional. So
seems to be a theme, doesn't it? We get these teams who really want to play us off the park, who on paper, it looks like we're just going to spank, but we didn't. Do you think the long layoff, because it's been a bit of inactivity, hasn't it, in the league, do you reckon that's had an impact as well?
Probably. And, you know, I'd hate to keep coming back to it, but the injuries as well, and Miedema not knowing if she was going to be playing, if she was going to be back fit as well. I think she's really suffering this season. I feel like she hasn't really got back to, I mean, she scored a few goals here and there, but a player from her quality, like we're expecting, I mean, she's made 150 appearances for Arsenal. She scored 120 goals. None of them have come from penalties. That just shows you the expectations.
Not like up. Some of this mob.
We're not going to mention other names, but exactly. I think that just shows you her capability, and she just seems a little bit off pace. I think she had a pretty poor Euros, and she's kind of still suffering a bit of a hangover from that.
She'll come good.
Absolutely, I've no doubt of that. I think just a bit of time, and you know, hopefully other players can step up in those moments when she's struggling. So, yeah, I think it is a bit of a sticky time, but. You know, as long as we're getting the points and we're, you know, scoring goals, however they come, we'll take it.
Beth Mead capped off a career best season by scooping second place in the Ballon d'Or. No surprise there, really, was there? I suppose Miedema being, what was she, 11th or something? I was like, come on.
I was surprised about how far back she was, actually. I think probably worth mentioning as well that Mead only missed out by one point or one vote, however it's done. It was really tight. It was really, really tight. Obviously, she lost to Alexia, Barcelona's Alexia. An exceptional player, has to be said, but she did miss all of the Euros with an ACL injury. She's missed all the start of this season. She won last year. I think, you know, I thought it was a bit harsh on Mead, to be honest, given... you know, Arsenal player of the season. They were one point off winning the league last year. Okay, we didn't do that well in the Champions League, but her Euros performance, I think if that was almost any other player, that alone would have been enough. But, you know.
Yeah, it's quite, mind you, the Ballon d'Ors, I've not got a lot of faith in them, I've got to be honest, on past history. While we're touching on the Ballon d'Or, Benzema got the 2020, hello, what's that, the cutlery?
Yeah, sorry.
What's going on? I'll have a cup of tea while you're there. he's got the 2022 Ballon d'Or for the first time in his career. It makes a change, doesn't it, Jay? And it's well overdue.
Yeah, well, you say makes a change. I think you have to play for Barcelona or Real, don't you? Ballon d'Or. I mean, he had a great season. I've always liked Benzema. Absolute brutal striker. He pretty much single-handedly dragged Real through that Champions League season.
I think about two or three occasions he should have got it.
Yeah. And, you know, since Ronaldo's left, I think he's really stepped up at Real. Ballon d'Or is a funny one because I think it really is like it's a demonstration of how much football writers hate the Premier League, you know, because they very rarely give it to anyone playing in the Premier League. And ultimately, outside of that, you know, you've only got a handful of players that could win it. But Benzema definitely deserved it. Savage striker, somebody I wanted to come to Arsenal years ago, obviously never going to happen, but technically great. You know, he's, you know, for a player, he's age in the stage of his career to still be playing at that level. I mean, last season he was just deadly. And I remember, I think it was the game against Chelsea at Stamford Bridge. He scored, I think, two great headers. And that's something that maybe he's not sort of known for, but great player, fully deserving. I think Sadio Mane got second, didn't he? He got runners up.
Yeah.
You know, you can, that's also deserving as well. So, yeah.
Ronaldo, 20th.
Yeah, but I mean, it's a reflection, isn't it? I think on Man United, I think, you know, if he'd have scored those goals, what, 18 league goals back at Rayo, we'd be much higher up. Like I said earlier, I sort of, when Henri didn't get it and got pipped to it by Nedved, I lost all interest after that, to be honest.
Yeah, I kind of, I don't really pay it that much attention, but obviously Beth Mead getting up there was
absolutely
was a good bit of news. And I just thought, oh, Benzema, definitely a lovely one to have in there and well-deserved for him. Mm-hmm. Right, yeah. Premier League, let's get into another match. Premier League, Elland Road, off we tumbled. Let's go through the Arsenal team. It was a 4-2-3-1 formation. It was Ramsdale in goal. Tomiyasu back. I wasn't sure whether he would be. Gabriel, William Saliba, Ben White, Thomas Partey, Granit Xhaka, Martinelli, Martin Odegaard, Bukayo Saka and Gabriel Jesus. No Tierney, Jay. Were you kind of surprised that he's making inroads?
I suppose you can understand, you know, obviously in hindsight now, you can understand why Tomiyasu was included, because he absolutely, I mean, I don't think you've seen many fullbacks nullify Salah like the way he did.
I watched it again the other day and it's remarkable.
Yeah, he had an unreal performance. You know, Salah again showed it the weekend. He's just what player he is. I suppose it was not really a shock. I mean, I was expecting that team, really. It must be good having a player of Tierney's quality on the bench. You know, for so many years now, we haven't had too many great defensive options. And to have him on the bench, obviously, he came on later on to shore things up. But I had no issue with the starting lineup at all. No, I think it was strong. You know, with Zinchenko being injured, I think it was probably as strong as we could go. And obviously, we just beat Liverpool, so there wasn't going to be too many changes.
I think it's quite interesting what you said the other week, Jay. It was after the Tottenham game. You kind of said, will they get themselves up for Liverpool? And it wasn't right then, but this feels a little bit like it didn't quite get there. A weird weekend.
I think from this is where, you know, a huge benefit of having European football, you know, obviously the financial side of it, and also especially the early stages of the Europa League gives younger players chance to, and players that aren't necessarily involved, they get time. But also, you know, when you've been on a run like we have, you know, you've got the North London Derby, everything that goes with that, such an emotional game, such a, you know, maybe slightly more aggressive than your normal Premier League game, but it's more the emotional side. You know, you go from that to then being able to play in Europe. So you can kind of come down, if that makes sense. You can kind of get back to a base level of, I don't know, approach. And then you go into the Liverpool game, which is more technical than the Spurs game. Liverpool are a far better side than Spurs, regardless of how the league table, you know, however you read the league table at the minute, Liverpool are far better side. You're dealing with a much higher quality of footballer. So from a technical side, maybe the emotional side drops, technical side goes up, and then you've got the chance to go and play in Europe again, and it brings you back down again. So that's helped no end. But then you go into a game at Elland Road, which, I mean, before the game, I was really, really concerned. I thought this was going to be one step too far, because anyone that's followed the Premier League or English football for any sort of space of time will know how intense Elland Road is. It's never quiet there. It doesn't matter what time of day the game is, whether it's 12:30 or late on a Sunday or whatever. The fans are on top of you. The fans are not very nice. You know, they are very passionate about the home team. And I thought, if we're not on this straight away and we're not matching them straight away, we could be in trouble. And then obviously there was the whole farce of the communication issue that went on for so long. But before the game, I watched it. Me and my son, we watched it, and we were both saying this could be tough. This could be a tough, tough day. We've had two huge league games, and we've come through it. And this is going to be a massive test. And I mean, I don't know about you guys, but I'm sure we'll come on to the second half. But oh my God, that was an intense game. That was
squeaky bum time, I think we can say that. 45 minutes of squeaky bum.
Yeah.
It's such, I mean, I consulted the Mystic Egg Box. Here we go again. I've got to get rid of that at some point. And I thought on paper, and I was so up for it as well, and I thought it would be an easy 3-0. And then when I saw the ground and the atmosphere eventually, I thought, oh, this is going to be a tough nut to crack.
But saying that, in the first half, I thought we were the better side. I did. And I thought there were some nice passages of play that we put together, which I thought we were the better side in the first half. And I thought we deserved to go in 1-0 up. Thought if you watch it back, Leeds, they didn't really create too much. There was a few shots from distance. They were pressuring us. They're in your face, as you would expect. But we were dealing with that. There were a few times in the first half where Jesus was dropping deep, picking the ball up, doing his slaloming run, getting fouled. And we were creating a few chances. Obviously, the second half was different, which I'm sure we'll talk about. But I thought we deserved to go in 1-0 up. I thought we were the better side. But that second half, my days.
Oh. We'll get to that in a minute. Lauren, were you surprised at the intensity? Because Leeds, I mean, here's an odd, interesting thing. Under Bielsa, they either went one way or the other. They were really good value for money, really good to watch. With this new guy, they're really good to watch. Mm. But there's the same problem, the same issues. They can't convert the chances. And I think that's going to be their big issue. But were you surprised about the intensity and the way they took us apart because they were stealing balls off people's toes?
Yes and no, kind of. Do you know what I mean? I think...
You fooled me there. I thought it went silent. Your mouth moved and nothing came out. We've lost her.
No, don't worry. I just had to think about that one. I do think sometimes before I speak. it's Leeds. I think it's a team that you can really never go into expecting it to be an easy game, especially away from home. And then given everything that happened with the VAR prior to the match, I think, oh God, like... I just thinking back, like, how could a player be in that position where the adrenaline's going, you're on the pitch, you're ready to go, and then you have to go back into the dressing room for, what was it, 15 minutes and then come back out and train and warm up again and do everything. I mean, that must absolutely send you down a rabbit hole of thoughts and emotions and all sorts. You really have to reset and go out and start again. And I think that was definitely more evident in the Arsenal players than the Leeds. I think they were able to keep their heads about them. I think obviously being at home, having the home crowd behind them probably helped there. But was I surprised? Not really. They have a very impressive home record as well. Yeah, I think I was a bit surprised about how easily they won the ball off Arsenal, but I wasn't surprised on Leeds half more so Arsenal. But given that we just played a very intense game on the Thursday night before, I think it's understandable.
Yeah, right. Well, as I say, we looked a bit creaky at the back. We looked a bit suspect in midfield because they were applying pressure where we normally are the ones that apply pressure. They kind of gave us it back. Who ever knew that Rodrigo was an Arsenal fan? What a ball, Jay. What a ball he played there.
Yeah, he tried to be a bit clever, maybe. He tried to switch the play. And, I mean... when the ball fell to Ødegaard, I mean, what a pass. You know, what an assist that is. Weighted to perfection. Saka didn't have to do anything. And that is a lovely finish. That is as good a finish as you'll see.
Very tight angle as well, wasn't it?
Mm. Yeah. But, I mean, keeper, no chance. Lovely assist. Great goal. And I thought that, you know, it wasn't against the run of play. Watch it back without the commentary. And you'll see that we were the better side in that first half.
He's a bit allergic to the commentary.
And then you're going 1-0 up, absolutely buzzing. absolutely buzzing. And I said we were talking at half time. It's like get another goal, and the whole stadium, you'll take the life out of the stadium, take the life out of the fans, take the life out of Leeds. But obviously that didn't happen, did it, in the second half?
I'll tell you what's interesting. If you replay that again and again, it's typical. All the people that are giving Odegaard a lot of flack, slow that down, watch it again and again and again, because he gets that ball and he does something quite odd on a regular basis. He kind of goes one way, he puts his foot on the ball, rolls it the other, and he's through. He's got his opportunity to make the pass. Mm. And that's exactly what he did.
Yeah, he had a good first half. Odegaard had a good first half. He did not so much in the second, and it was the right thing to do, you know, when he came off. But he did well in the first half, and he could have scored. He had a few long-range efforts, which were unlucky. So, yeah.
But that's... Lauren, sorry, Jay, go on.
That assist, I'm just saying, like, yeah. That lovely.
Yeah, it was top-notch. And as I say, anyone who's criticising Odegaard, you've got to have a look at that. And maybe just focus on one particular game, just watching him. Mm. Because that really does show you the quality that he's got in that Arsenal side. So, let's move on to this. Bamford comes on for Rodrigo, who we like him. We like Rodrigo.
They should have left him on. It would have been a much nicer afternoon, wouldn't it?
he played us in very much so. Then immediately Bamford comes on. He starts getting in the action. It's 47 minutes. Bamford puts the ball into the Arsenal net, a kind of rebound off Tomiyasu, a shove given against Gabriel. And that was a warning shot for us, wasn't it? Leeds were on the rampage, hitting the gas, and we looked a bit disjointed. 60th minute, Saliba plays Patty Fingers with a ball from Morocco. I've got no arguments with that, have you, Jay?
No, again, like you watch it back. There's a great shot of from behind the goal when the ball drops and hits Saliba. His face, he's like, because he knows straight away. And I think Saliba's another one I didn't think was as bad as people were making out. I thought it was a super intense game, and he, for the majority of the game, was calm. He made that. I mean, was it a mistake? It's harsh because I don't know what Leeds player was in front of him. It must have been Bamford. He was literally a foot away, and the ball just dropped. His arm shouldn't have been there, but he knew straight away.
We've all done that though, haven't we? Like the ball comes down, you think you could have a flick with it.
What you're supposed to, I mean, ultimately, what you're supposed to do with your arm, you can't remove your arm, can you? But it was handball. And it was funny because, you know, again, like, by that point, we were getting absolutely battered. You know, the disallowed goal, I thought, you know, there was a shove there, but it was soft, you know, I think, but it was probably the right call. And by that point, I mean, you're hiding behind a cushion, aren't you? It was just like super intense. So you're thinking, I said to my son, you know, Aston was like, Ramsdale's going to save it. He's going to save it. Don't worry. It's calm. And I was like, he's not going to save it. It's like, you know, if they score here, they're going to score another one. And then the season's over. That kind of stuff.
You know what? At that point, I kind of turned a bit sideways. I just had one bit of an eye on what was going on.
And Aston was like, don't worry, Ramsdale's going to save it. And he lined the shot. And I mean, obviously Bamford put it wide, but Ramsdale had it covered, didn't he? He completely judged it right. Wasn't a great penalty.
That was a shocker.
Yeah, it wasn't a great one, was it?
70th minute, Ramsdale come to the Arsenal rescue. Bamford couldn't get it past him. It was all nip and tuck with it, wasn't it, really? The half chances, they could have actually won this match 3-1, but failed to take their opportunities. Mm. There was a fair bit of niggle, Lauren, between Gabriel and Bamford. That's the second week on the bounce that the Arsenal defenders been in the spotlight for that sort of argy-barginess. Mm-hmm. First, there's a red card that turns into a yellow. There's no penalty because Bamford dishes out a bit of pushing and shoving. But there was no yellow card for Bamford. How does that work?
Do you know what? Because of the delay, I had something planned actually Sunday evening. So I was on my way listening to it on live score. Thank God I wasn't watching it because I don't think I would have been able. But when I tell you, listening to the audio, I suppose, extracted from the, or separate to the visuals, I was thinking, what is going on here? And I had a bit of a moment where I'm listening, I'm hearing an Arsenal player is being sent off, and I just had flashbacks to last season where we saw the likes of Gabriel lose his head in the big games. We saw the likes of Martinelli as well. Okay, obviously that was a harsh red card against City, but those thoughts started coming back to me, and I was thinking, you know, this is where we lose games, and this is where we lose our, you know, our great run in the league. It was mental. Obviously I've seen it since then. Going off the first initial, okay, Gabriel goes down, it looks like he kicks out. I still don't know. Like, it was just, it was crazy. I don't know what the referee's initial thought was. I think he did go over to the,
I think it was one of those, Lauren, that you give them, if you're going to give the yellow card, they both get one because they were both guilty of something. So, I don't know what was going on there.
It was wild, wasn't it? And then to be, you know, red card, then for that to be taken back, and it was in the box, wasn't it? So it would have been a penalty as well, surely.
It was
wild again. But I mean, look, thank God they got far working in the end and we didn't have to deal with that, you know.
So that's the one time we're going to say that on this show, podcast family. We're going to say that VAR is a very good thing.
Yeah, fantastic.
We'll get rid of it next week because we'll probably be on the wrong end of it. But for now, we'll say it was good. We're not going to go too mad on the second half because we got our asses kicked.
Absolutely.
And they were all over us like cheap
battered. So. We got absolutely smothered. We were destroyed.
Mm-hmm. When they put extra time on, I was blow the whistle. I was getting quite agitated. I needed those 3 points. Mm-hmm. It was by the end of a drug fix.
Honestly, by the end of the game, I can't think of a game where I was that drained by the end of it. Mm-hmm. Like so much. I mean, Leeds. We were getting battered. We couldn't even put three passes together. And by the end, I mean, there was a dodgy offside. I think it was just before the Saliba handball. If VAR went another 5 seconds back, we should have had a free kick. It was offside, which kind of wound me up a little bit. But by the end, I mean,
you were proper wound up. That wound me up a little bit. I bet you were ripping cushions.
When that final whistle went, my daughter was... She's not massively into football, but she came in because she could hear what we were like. And she was laughing her head off because at the end, it was like we'd scored a last-minute winner. It's great beating... I think it was just the manner of the win. And it was obviously, we're going to drop points this season. We all know that. And we all know that I think you said it a couple of weeks back, Lauren. You know, we are overachieving at the moment. I think everybody knows that. We're levels above maybe where we should be. However, the players have absolutely earned it and we deserve to be where we are. And that win, you know, we're not being told anymore. We haven't played anybody. You know, we've it's good. It's amazing beating Spurs. It's unreal beating Liverpool. But to go to Leeds like that, you know, I mean, we might go to Southampton and slip up, but that was for just confidence and you know, for Mikel, who he has got to make these tough choices. I'm sure he doesn't like leaving Kieran Tierney on the bench, but it's, you know, he's the weak. Yeah, but great result. And I mean, like I said, by the end, blood, honestly, wow. Mm-hmm. I was done. I was finished.
Absolutely.
Unreal.
I went for a walk.
Crazy afternoon. Crazy.
I try to de-stress, sort of, you know, when you sort of shake your shoulders and go out and have a breath of fresh air. And then I had to have a drink because that's what they'd driven me to. Mm-hmm. I'd run out of nails. The next thing was the fridge.
That's what I did. I watched the men's, went for a drink, came back, watched the women, and then I had to have another drink because it was just so exhausting. But I just want to say there, to add to what Jay is saying, that is the type of game that last season we would have lost or the season before.
All right, I'm blaming you because it was a game not too long ago where you said you were a bit bored by it. So you weren't bored by this one. You were clutching the seat of your trousers.
I couldn't get enough of it, honestly. But it was definitely, it feels like a turning point in a way. And obviously we've had that. Okay, we bet Spurs last season, but this season there seemed to be more riding on it, I suppose.
Yeah.
Because Conte's there, maybe that's what it is. Liverpool, again, as you said, massive, of course. Like, we shouldn't be winning that game. But we've seen it so many times where we're playing a team like Leeds, super aggressive. They're absolutely rattling us. We just can't get our foot, you know, we can't get our foothold in the game. And to go back to speaking about the Invincibles earlier, Arsenal have such a brand of football. And as soon as they're not playing that brand, it kind of feels like the plan's being derailed, mm-hmm. which was the case on Sunday. But we managed to hold out and pull through. And I think that is a massive, massive sign of the character within the team, yeah. something that was lacking last season. So, yeah.
Well, even with the Wenger years, I mean, we saw brilliant attacks and all the rest of it, free-flowing attacking football. But on the odd occasion, you got a little bit of a come down. There was a little bit of a, we just sneaked that one, you know. Mm. So it happens. George Graham, you know, notorious for the sneaky, grubby 1-0.
George Graham, yeah.
So, you know, if you're expecting to win 3 or 4-0 every week, don't.
No.
That's the advice. Let's do some match stats, and then we've got some emails, because we haven't done the emails for a while. Shots, 16 for Leeds, 9 for Arsenal, 4 shots on target for each, 47% possession for Leeds, 53 surprisingly for Arsenal, 428 passes, 500 for us, 78% pass accuracy for them, 83% for us. Slightly misleading. Right, I'm going to give you each an email. Let me know your thoughts. John says, Lauren, John. All right, John. Gabriel needs to go.
Harsh.
He's very upset, isn't he, old John? And it's not the other John. I think we've got another John who's a little bit more irate. But
I like that he's direct and he's straight to the point. I was waiting for a bit of time to formulate an answer there, but no.
Very short.
To be honest, I think people are being a bit harsh on Gabriel. I do think he has a very rash, you know, he has the tendency to be rash. He does have, let's call it the Xhaka streak, shall we? He's liable at any moment to do something a little bit irrational and you're kind of going, oh God, like, you know, what are you doing there? I think he's unfortunate, in a sense, unfortunate to be playing against somebody as consistent and solid as Saliba. I think that's not doing him any favours. All his minor mistakes, anytime he steps out of place, it's really magnified. However, I think those mistakes are definitely much more, you know, there's a lot more attention on them as to when Saliba might have a certain incident or whatever. I think Gabriel gave away a penalty for a handball earlier in the season. Was it against Leicester? I'm not sure if it was a handball, but he definitely gave away a penalty. And, you know, it kind of seemed as though people were going for his throat, whereas, you know,
yeah,
Saliba does that. And
let's remind ourselves, though, Lauren, last season, he was right up there. He was one of our best players on a regular basis.
100%. And look, it was never the debate, John. Is it going to be Saliba or Gabriel? It was always Saliba or Ben White. Gabriel's place in that centre-back pairing was always solid. And, you know, it hasn't really, I mean, obviously Rob Holding's coming in for the Europa League matches, but I don't think there's any fear of him taking his spot in the league, really. I respect Holding a lot and I think he's a fantastic player. Amazing attitude. Great squad player, but in terms of competition for that spot, I don't think he's going to really be giving it to him. So until we get somebody who perhaps can offer a bit more competition, I don't think there's any need to get rid of Gabriel. And I think people need to, you know, if you're going to support someone, if they make mistakes, support the whole team. That's my mentality around it, you know.
I mean, here's the thing that we've got to remind ourselves is, yes, we could replace him, take him off, let him find a bit of form, practice on certain things, but that could undermine his confidence further. So it's a very difficult thing. And I'm sure that Mikel's going to stick with it. I'm sure he is.
100%. I'm confident in that as well. But, you know, I think absolutely not. I think people need to calm down a little bit and just, you know.
Enjoy. Yeah. Sort yourselves out there. What's the matter with you?
And I just add, I thought against Leeds, he was superb. I thought he made some great blocks. And take away that incident at the end where I don't think he kicked out of Bamford, but he definitely wanted to. He has got that side to him, but I just wanted
to spat that out then.
Like, Lauren, brilliant answer. Can't add anything other than I just wanted to say he was really good against Leeds. And sometimes you can't always be Saliba where you're the Rolls Royce. You know, you sometimes you just need, like Tom said, last season he was just a mountain, you know, our best defender, you know, alongside Ben White. So, yeah, no way sell him. Yeah. No, not a chance.
Mm-hmm. Right then, Jay, Red Fred, and he says, fans are seriously deranged, 4 points ahead of City, like they've already won the league. Calm down.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not getting carried away. I said on Sunday, if we're still top of the league after another 10 games, then maybe I'll entertain the idea of us being in the race. I got people coming back to me saying, you know, even then it'll be too early. But I don't think any sane Arsenal supporter is considering a title run or title race yet. But why, if you can't enjoy being top of the league and having won 9 of 10 games, then why are you even watching? Like, why are you even watching football? Like, no one's getting carried away. People are just enjoying it. And, you know, it's been a long time since we've been here, been, you know, top of the league. And we've beaten, you know, we were one dodgy VAR call away from being 10 out of 10, you know, we all know we're going to drop points and we all know City are going to overtake us. But, I mean, come on. You've got to enjoy it.
Well, this has surprised me because, really, it's such a contrast to last season, the start and where we are now and all the rest of it. And then you've still got these negative emails coming in, negative comments. I mean, what do you want?
Yeah.
Right then, Lauren, Saliba showed inexperience and a degree of weakness against Leeds. Are we still claiming he's the real deal? This is the example of the negativity.
of course. The same way the team's going to drop points throughout the season, players are going to have on and off days. He's proven himself over the course of the game so far that he's an exceptional addition to the team. You know, so early on, as I mentioned earlier, it was the Ben White versus Saliba debate. That's gone. That's completely gone out the window. It's his position now. And, you know, he's solidified it for himself. He's 21 years of age. And it's exciting. It's really, really exciting to see. You know, I think thinking back, we always have very young midfielders and attacking players. But to have somebody that young in defence is crazy, really. I think inexperience? Is that what the...
Yeah, it's Jackie. I think I missed the name off as well. Sorry, Jackie, but stop moaning, for God's sake.
Yeah, to answer your question shortly. Exactly, he's 21. He's not experienced. He's 21. He's played... This is his first full season in the Premier League. He's played 10 games. He's not experienced. No one here is claiming that he is experience. He plays like he's experienced, but you know, obviously he's still got a lot to learn, and you know, that's part of
Jackie, Tony Adams scored in his own goal on occasion. I think that's when we did the double as well, but as my mind's going trying to retrace it, but yeah, he got castigated for that, and that's Tony Adams. So Saliba, all the players, they make mistakes. They're human beings. And the pressure they're under, especially when you're top of the table. Let's just deal with this one. We'll just blitz this one. It's BZT, whatever that is. And it just reinforces your point. I don't care if we're not the finished article. I'm enjoying the luxury of winning and being top.
Yeah.
So that kind of reinforces that. One for you, Jay. Tony Framp says, Arteta out brigade. When are you going to admit that you were wrong?
Well, I mean, you mentioned Rich. I think he's obviously, you said he's not convinced at the moment. And you can't speak for people. I don't understand. I didn't understand the criticism really last season when we certainly weren't as high as we are now. I can't give an answer. I don't know, because if you can't see improvement, like if you can't see that we have also improved the squad, we've bulked the squad up with quality players, and we're winning games like on Sunday, you know, different types of wins. You know, we incredibly consistent. The fans, you know, you just have to look at this, what's happening inside the Emirates, you know, like what a difference, you know, no more than a year ago, it wasn't like that, you know,
it's fairly toxic, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was still, there were still big issues in the stadium and that's all gone now. You know, the fans are completely behind every single player. The players are likable and you know, they're more relatable, I think, than ever, you know.
I feel, Jake,
the whole fan base isn't going to be happy. You know, there is going to be people that are just not happy by nature, maybe. But if you can't see improvement, and if you can't see that we're moving in the right direction, if we drop points against Southampton at the weekend, I'm sure there'll be people criticising and throwing players under the bus and whoever makes the inevitable mistake. But come on, we need some logic and we need to be realistic here. Look where we are. Nobody would have predicted we would be here after 10 games. So, I mean, I don't get it, but
I suppose. I feel like every time we tick a box, so we haven't beaten anyone special. So we do Spurs, we do Liverpool, we tick those boxes. And then they go, well, you haven't done this. And when we do that, it's, well, you haven't done this. You haven't won a trophy. Well, Arteta has won two trophies. They might not be the most glamorous trophies in people's opinions, but he's won two already. Let's put that in the bank. Ka-ching. Mm-hmm. I just think it's one of those, you'll never win with a certain percentage of the Arsenal followers. And that's the way it is.
Mm-hmm.
You've just got your own beliefs and you go with that. Right, let's just look forward to the games ahead. Lauren, it's Ajax, isn't it, in the WSL?
No, it is Lyon in the Champions League. Sorry, Lyon in the Champions League on Wednesday night. So obviously our first group game in the Champions League. It's going to be a bloodbath. I cannot see it ending well.
As long as it's exciting and not like this, three games.
You know? I think you're going to see a lot of goals, but unfortunately not in Arsenal's favour. We're talking about, I mean, this is last season's Champions.
It's all right, podcast family. Don't worry, I can edit that out and we'll slip in where she says, oh, 3-0, we'll do that.
I wish. No, look, we're away from home. We're against undisputably the best women's team of all time, especially in the Champions League. I think they've won it 8 years. They only had a blip when Barcelona won the season before last. We're up against it. In an ideal world, a draw would be an exceptional result. I think, we played Barcelona last season in the group stages and it was 5-1 and they missed a penalty. And I mean, we know the quality of the Arsenal team. It's exceptional, but it just shows you the jump when you start playing the top league, the top teams from the other leagues in Europe. So when you're playing the Spanish league winners, Barcelona, the French league winners,
it's probably come at the wrong time with the injuries and stuff as well, isn't it?
Exactly. That was going to be my next point. It's a horrendous time. We're a bit all over the place with the squad. I think these injuries have shown that we're lacking a bit of depth, really, to try and compete, not just in the league, but Europe as well. So, not really great news there. But,
back to that's just finished the podcast, isn't it? We're all really thoroughly depressed. We've watched three really humdrum matches. And now we've got that forecast. That's terrible.
At least there'll be goals, okay?
Jay, up for us, boys. We've got PSV and then Southampton. We'll skip the PSV one. I think, not sure. Draw, Durs, I think.
We're at home, aren't we, I think, against PSV. So I think we should. We'll probably get a result there. They're not a bad side, are they? But probably the better side out of the other out of the three in the group, so I expect us to get a win there. Southampton, they play Bournemouth, I think, tomorrow away. Not a long, you know, certainly not a massive trek for them. It's so tough at the moment because games are coming thick and fast, aren't they? I think if we manage to stay injury free from the Europa League game, I think we'll get a result. I think we will. I think it's a tricky game. We've struggled against Southampton away from home in recent years. But I think there's a just at the minute, we're a different animal, aren't we, at the moment? I think we've shown that we can win or not get beat in difficult situations and difficult atmospheres. So I think we're going to get – yeah, I think we'll win.
Score prediction? Something jolly, Jay, just for our podcast families. They're all a bit depressed.
Something jolly, right. 4-0 Arsenal.
Oh, that is over the top. I'm going to go 2-0. Lauren, what's your thoughts? I know you love this bit. This is your favourite bit of the whole podcast, isn't it?
I'll go with 2-1. Let's go 2-1 there.
2-1. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, it was nice to see before we go that Pep, the great Pep Guardiola, didn't understand the handball rule. Did you see that? Because we were wittering on about handball. What constitutes it now? Because looking at this, VAR was used in the goalless draw with Copenhagen in the Champions League. And he was kind of saying, well, I just don't know what handball is anymore. Because according to what I've got here, Peter Crouch said Rodri's stunning first half strike was disallowed because VAR saw Riyad Mahrez accidentally touch the ball with the slimmest of fingers. Peter Crouch said he's got it, his arm by his side, but it brushes it. And I think it was Owen Hargreaves sort of said, well, it's just absolute nonsense now. So it's not just us sort of moaning about handballs and offside. It's the great Pep Guardiola as well. Nice to see him lose, though. That was lovely.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, Mr. Klopp.
Absolutely. How do you feel about the game being postponed this week? I've heard a lot, because obviously we were meant to play City this week. And I've heard a lot of people saying that it's probably a bit of a pity for Arsenal, given our good form and City off the back of the Liverpool loss. How do we feel about that?
Yeah, it's really unfortunate, but it is what it is. And it's kind of worked out really well for them. But obviously, when you're in the position we're in, you just want to play your games, don't you? You just want to keep the momentum going. And we would have got up for that one, I'm sure. And to be honest, last season, when we copped it off them, we were the better side. And Pep almost admitted, not quite, but almost, that we were head and shoulders above them. What do you think, Jay?
I think... Is there ever a good time to play City? I know they just got beat by Liverpool, but they are such a good side. And I presume you guys caught some of the Liverpool game. Like Leeds, they very much deserve some out of that. I think it's probably better that we don't play them at the minute. Keep them in the distance as far away as possible. And so we can generate as many points as possible because I still think they are the team to beat and they would cause us a lot of problems. And after such a like crazy battle against, you know, an insane, crazy game against Leeds, you know, the first game back against City would have been hard, you know, to try and navigate through. So I'm pretty glad that it's just PSV, then Southampton. And then obviously you get on to, is it Chelsea after that?
I think so, yeah. I think we'll start that as well.
Or it might be Forest and then Chelsea.
Yeah, it's Forest. Yeah, Forest and Chelsea,
So obviously the Chelsea game's another big one, isn't it? But games are coming thick and fast, aren't they? You know, it's going to be key rotating and, you know, it's going to be interesting to see, you know, we haven't seen Zinchenko for a while, have we? You know, we'd like to get him back because he's quite versatile and can play in a number of different positions. So, I mean, Southampton, they're not City. So, you know, you'd live in hope that we can get a result there.
I hope so. Anyway, let's keep the wheels turning. Let's get another 3 points, even if it's a grubby, unexciting,
4-0.
Hard watch. Guys, thanks for another podcast. I'll see you on the next one. You look after yourselves.
Bye.
See you later.
Bye.
Cheers.
My thanks to Silent Dave. You can find him on Twitter as SilentDave101. That's also the home of Jay, who you can look up as the Bald Gooner. You can cozy up with Connor at ConnorJack2 on the Twitterverse, and Paul is at PMacCap. Look up Lauren on LaurenD2710. The podcast is on every social media outlet, TikTok, Facebook, Twitter. Shout outs to Brandon Murphy, Dave Miller of Arsenal Attic, Simon DC of Let's Be Arsenal FC, which is twin to the podcast. Also check out arsedevils.com for opinion and news on all things Arsenal. Please like and follow this audio version of the podcast and subscribe to the YouTube version of the show. Want to say hi, ask a question or take part in the show? It's an Arsenal thing for at gmail.com. A big thanks to all of you who support us, whether you listen or watch. Until next time, look after yourselves and each other. And finally, remember this. North London is most certainly red.
It's a top selector.